Ekhatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekhatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are undertaking an exploration that dives right to the very foundation of life itself. We're opening up Siddhartha Mukherjee's extraordinary book, The Song of the Cell, an exploration of medicine and the new human. If you, like us, are fascinated by the current revolution in, you know, gene editing, immunotherapy, stem cells, well, you definitely need this deep dive.
Oh, it's a fantastic book. It really manages to pull together centuries of science into one really compelling narrative. Mukherjee's central idea is, well, elegantly simple. The cell isn't just a basic building block. It is the fundamental unit of life. And understanding it, mastering its workings, maybe fixing its broken programming, that's pretty much the entire story of modern medicine.
Right. And the relevance today couldn't be higher, could it?
Yeah.
We're absolutely living in that future he was talking about.
Yeah.
We're watching cellular biology transform treatments,
yeah,
you know, in real time, shifting the focus from just treating generalized organs or symptoms like giving you a pill for inflammation,
mm-hmm,
to addressing the underlying specific cellular causes. We're getting really micro-targeted.
That specificity is absolutely key. And this shift, well, it means the implications are just profound. We're moving toward genuine cellular engineering, things like reprogramming immune systems, editing genes. And this inevitably raises some really critical ethical questions, doesn't it?
Yeah.
About human enhancement, biological autonomy, and what it truly means to define the self when our very building blocks are becoming, well, mutable.
Okay, so let's unpack the person who's guiding us through this this immense topic. Mukherjee is truly unique. He's not just an insightful writer. He's a practicing oncologist, a stem cell biologist, and a Pulitzer Prize-winning author, famous for the Emperor of All Maladies.
Right, his credentials, an MD from Harvard, a PhD in immunology from Oxford as a Rhodes Scholar, it gives him this really rare, invaluable lens. He operates, you could say, at the precise intersection of scientific research, you know, the lab bench and clinical application, the patient's bedside. He's been called a biographer of scientific concepts. He manages to combine that scientific rigor with a really deep human understanding of what illness actually means to people.
And his experience seeing cellular failure firsthand, especially in cancer research, that must really color the whole book.
Oh, absolutely, because cellular dysfunction lies right at the heart of malignancy of cancer. He has intimate knowledge of both the immense promise of these cellular breakthroughs and the often terrifying realities of cellular betrayal, you know, where the body's own cells turn rogue. He sees that balance, that cooperation and rebellion probably every single day in his clinic.
So moving on to the book itself, The Song of the Cell is, well, it's truly ambitious, isn't it? It functions as a historical account of cellular discovery, a scientific primer, a medical textbook on therapies, and ultimately a really profound philosophical meditation on what life even is.
The scope is massive. I mean, he traces the cell from its initial, almost accidental discovery back in the 17th century.
Right, Hooke and the cork.
Exactly. When Robert Hooke first coined the term cell, looking at cork, and then Leeuwenhoek saw his animalcules and drops of water, that was really just the starting pistol.
In that early history, it kind of culminated in the establishment of cell theory, which was this huge step forward by pioneers like Rudolf Virchow. He delivered that foundational axiom, the one that underpins all modern biology. Omnis cellula e cellula.
All cells come from cells.
All cells come from cells. It was a complete refutation of spontaneous generation, giving life this singular fundamental origin point.
And having that fixed origin point allowed Mukherjee to then chart the course of modern medicine. We are, you know, officially past the age of just chemical medicine.
The age of pills.
Right, the age of broad-acting pharmaceuticals. And we're firmly entrenched now in cellular medicine. Living engineered cells are the new drugs. This includes things like the success of IVF, the targeted brilliance of CAR T cell therapy we mentioned, and stem cell technology.
It is genuinely astonishing when you think about it, that our therapeutic agents are no longer just molecules, but customized living components of ourselves.
Precisely. And the book culminates in this idea of the new human whose biology can be edited, repaired, maybe even augmented at this foundational cellular level. It really demands that we reconsider the very definition of life, health, and, well, what constitutes the self.
Okay, let's delve into some of the specific sections that really grabbed us. Starting with that historical foundation, part one, the discovery phase. It really hinges on the importance of Virchow's axiom, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Establishing the cell as the basis of growth, reproduction, and disease. It finally gave medical science a kind of fixed address for all problems.
Exactly. Instead of these abstract theories about, you know, humors or spiritual imbalances, Virchow basically told us, look, disease is a structural problem, and that structure is the cell. It was the ultimate scientific reduction, in a way.
Okay. And from that foundation, we can jump to part three, the guardian cell, the immune system. I love how he frames it. Like the body's hyper-intelligent, highly trained police force tasked with probably the most difficult job possible. Instantly distinguishing between self and non-self.
Mm-hmm. And getting that wrong is disastrous.
Right. That distinction is the line between health and, well, catastrophic autoimmune disease or letting invaders run rampant.
And to show the power and also the danger of manipulating this system, he brings in the really compelling case study of Emily Whitehead. She was one of the first pediatric patients to receive that revolutionary CAR T cell therapy for a very aggressive leukemia.
Her story is, well, it's the ultimate proof of concept for cellular medicine, isn't it? They took her own T cells, essentially trained them to become precision assassins against her specific cancer, and then reintroduced them.
Right. A living drug made from her own body.
Yeah. And she almost died from the immune storm that followed, the cytokine release syndrome.
Which is a real risk.
But then she recovered fully. And she remains cancer-free today. It's incredible. This breakthrough really proves that, quote, we saw referenced. We are not just treating diseases anymore. We are rewriting the cellular programs that define life itself.
That rewriting capability is what makes this so, so revolutionary. But, okay, if we move from the guardian cell to the pathological cell in part four, we see the dark side, cancer. It's the paradigmatic example of cellular rebellion, or maybe betrayal.
Betrayal, yeah.
These cells basically abandon their social contract with the organism. They seek unlimited personal growth and survival, often at the expense of the entire body.
So the key isn't just a mutation happening, it's the breaking of that fundamental social contract with the rest of the organism. They sort of decide they no longer owe allegiance to the rest of the cellular society.
Exactly. You can think of cancer cells as autonomous sociopaths, just living solely for themselves, disregarding the whole. But okay, if dysfunction is one side of the coin, the potential for repair is the other. And that brings us to part V, the regenerating cell. Here we discover stem cells, and particularly the Nobel Prize-winning work of Shinya Yamanaka on induced pluripotent stem cells, iPSCs.
Okay, iPSCs. That sounds incredibly complex. What are they in sort of simple terms?
Well, it was a monumental achievement. Think of iPSCs as maybe adult skin cells that have been given a biological undo button.
Oh, okay.
Yamanaka essentially found a cocktail of genes, factors, that could reprogram these differentiated adult cells like skin and reset them. Reset them back to their, let's say, potential teenage years, making them pluripotent, capable of turning into almost any other cell type again, whether it's a neuron or a heart muscle cell.
Wow. So that means we potentially have a cellular repair kit that uses the patient's own tissue, which should minimize rejection issues.
Precisely. That's the hope. And this leads us directly into part six, the designing cell, which is really the future we are building right now. It's powered by technologies like CRISPR gene editing. This allows scientists to go in and precisely alter a cell's DNA code, maybe fixing errors. Mukherjee highlights the potential for treating genetic conditions like sickle cell anemia by editing blood stem cells before they make faulty blood cells. You're fixing the instruction manual before the cell is even created.
Incredible. Okay, let's maybe zoom out a bit now and look at the key threads, the themes that tie all these historical and futuristic concepts together. The first central theme seems to be that idea of cellular cooperation and betrayal.
Mm-hmm. Multicellular life, our existence, is this vast ancient compromise. It depends entirely on trillions of cells working together in a generally harmonious cellular society. Health is maintained by cooperation. Disease often arises from that cellular betrayal we talked about.
And viewing it that way, that metaphor, it helps us understand our bodies not as fixed, simple machines, but as these incredibly complex, dynamic ecosystems where maintaining balance is just paramount.
Exactly. And that leads directly to the second major theme, the revolution of cellular therapeutics. We are shifting fundamentally from chemistry to biology as medicine. We're moving from giving people mass-produced pills to delivering living, engineered cells as treatments.
And this is where that concept of the democratization of medicine becomes really important, which is a key takeaway from the book. How does customization actually lead to democratization? It sounds almost counterintuitive, maybe more expensive.
Well, yeah, that's the challenge, but the potential is there. It challenges the existing economic model of medicine, right? Traditional pharmaceuticals are often designed to treat the widest possible population.
One size fits all.
Exactly. A drug that can be mass-produced and sold globally. But these generalized treatments often work unequally across diverse populations or have side effects for some but not others.
Whereas cellular medicine?
Cellular medicine, particularly if you're using your own edited cells, is inherently personalized. Now, you're right. The current cost of therapies like CAR-RT is prohibitive for many. But the underlying technology points toward a future where treatments are specific to your unique cellular profile, your immune system, your genetics. The goal is to make medicine hyper-effective for the individual, breaking away from those generalized, often less efficient mass treatments. The big hurdle now is making that personalized care affordable and accessible to everyone.
Okay, that makes sense. And the third theme is maybe the slightly more unsettling one, the blurring of self and other. Cellular therapies, things like transplants, gene editing, immune reprogramming, they really force us to confront traditional concepts of individual identity, don't they?
Absolutely. It's the profound philosophical question that's rooted right there in microbiology. If we can swap out or edit a patient's T cells, or if we grow replacement organs using their own stem cells but maybe cultured outside the body, where does the biological boundary of identity truly lie? When we're talking about, as that quote said, rewriting the very cellular programs that define life, we are, by necessity, reconsidering the concept of the self from the ground up.
So if we take these really powerful ideas, how can we apply the cellular knowledge right now, you know, in our lives?
Well, for personal health, I think the book is just a masterclass in developing what you might call cellular literacy. Just understanding that complex treatments like immunotherapy or stem cell transplants are rooted in the cellular logic. It allows you, the patient or caregiver, to move from being maybe a passive recipient of medicine to an informed, active participant in your own care.
Right. You understand the why behind the treatment.
Exactly. You understand why you are being treated the way you are, what the goal is at a fundamental level.
And for policy. Public discourse. The book seems to provide essential biological context needed for engaging in these huge debates about bioethics.
Oh, absolutely. When you hear discussions about, say, research funding for gene editing for CRISPR, or the regulations around cellular therapies for enhancement versus just treatment, Mukherjee provides the necessary background, the biological context, to engage meaningfully, to help ensure that we use this immense new power wisely and responsibly.
Yeah. Ultimately, the book really encourages this fundamental shift in perspective. It pushes us to view the body not as some static vessel, but as this dynamic, changing colony of trillions of cells in constant negotiation. It's impossible to read this and not feel a sense of, well, profound awe at the inner workings of life. It complicates simple notions of a fixed self.
And that leads to a final powerful insight, which I think is captured beautifully by one of his ideas or quotes. The body's cellular society is both more cooperative and more ruthless than any human society we've ever created. That ruthless cooperation, that's the very foundation of our existence. Health is the harmony of this cellular society. Mm-hmm. And our new cellular power means we humans are now responsible for ensuring that harmony is maintained, hopefully wisely and equitably for all.
Mm. And my final takeaway, the thing that really stuck with me, is just the historical scale of this journey. You know, current breakthroughs that feel like science fiction today, they're actually built on centuries of painstaking, often slow scientific discovery. It shows that the pursuit of understanding this invisible world, which really began with Robert Hooke just looking at a piece of cork, is still transforming our world today. And the cellular revolution, it feels like it's truly only just beginning.
It really does. It's an essential read, I think, for anyone living in the 21st century. Really puts things in perspective.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.